This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's November the 4th, 2005. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard of FCC Futures in Williamsville, Illinois. We'll take a look at the agricultural news. Just one quick story from the University of Illinois today. That on soybean cyst nematodes, in a way some farmers might be able to save as much as $100 an acre. And we'll also visit a feed store in Pena, Illinois. It's a little one and it's nostalgic. Stay with us because it's a good story. This is the Closing Market Report. It's a Friday afternoon.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. December wheat down a quarter of a cent today, 311 and one quarter the settlement price. The March futures at 327 and a quarter. They finished off a penny and a half. December corn at 195 and a half, down three quarters today. The March futures at 209 and three quarters were off three quarters. And the May corn at 217 and three quarters, down three quarters. December futures in the corn pit for next year. The red Dease finished the day three quarters higher at 244 and three quarters. November soybeans today, 580 and a half, were down 11 and a quarter cents. The January at 592, down nine and three quarters. And the March futures at $6 and a half, down nine. November contract down 3.5 cents at 617. December bean meal futures 176.20, down 210 for the day. December bean oil off 59 at 22.94. Feeder cattle from the Mercantile Exchange settled unchanged 116.07 and a half. For the Noves, December futures at 91.47 and a half were up 57 and a half, and December lean hogs at 62.27 and a half were 40 cents higher on the day.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Mike Zuzolo, Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good day to you, sir.
It's a beautiful day here, and it was not a terribly good day in the bean pit in Chicago.
No, it really wasn't. We saw the bean oil gave way quite a bit, you know, especially after the lunchtime, lunch hour period, it seemed like to us, Todd. We dipped below 23 on the Dease bean oil, 23.25, 23.50 area in the Jan bean oil. Those are levels that the traders are probably looking at to, you know, maintain a steady or firm market above those levels. The meal, though, held up. It held its 50-day moving average of 175.60, which equaled today's low. So we'd have to give meal probably a neutral rating today. Bean oil was probably the leader to the downside. We would also probably want to call everybody's attention to the Nov-Jan spread right now. Right now, at today's close, we've got November 11.5 cents discount to the January. That would suggest to us that the Jan needs to come down and meet the Nov before the Nov goes off the board here in a couple weeks. So that's a big thing that we're going to have to watch out for starting next week.
And how would you suspect that'll take place, especially with the crop report due out?
Excellent question. It will probably all hinge as far as that spread collapsing on the crop report. If we maintain a 260 carryover and demand is not hit by the avian flu in terms of feed exports or crush or the meal balance sheets aren't beat up too much, then we'll probably see the November rally up towards the Jan. Maybe the Nov will go up half speed, go up 5-6 cents, Jan comes down 5-6 cents, and they come to equilibrium that way. But if we approach that 280 to 300 million bushel carryover, especially on ideas that demand softening because of the Asian problems with the avian flu, then you're probably looking at a situation where Jan's going to fall almost all the way to November.
And then turn your attention to the corn side of this. Yesterday, the corn pit really didn't react when the bean pit made that 16, 17 cent drive higher. And again, it didn't react very much today. It's held steady. Is it simply a matter of waiting to see what happens with the crop report next week?
Yeah, you know, it's like watching ice melt at this point. That's the bottom line truth of the matter. We think the one thing that we got to watch for is this 195 level. That's a major support line from where the September went down to. It was actually encouraging to see the wheat go down 2, the beans go down 11, and the corn not make new contract lows. One of the things that, you know, Eric and David seen up there at the board earlier this week was a lot of prospective buyers in the corn pit, but it was all at lower price values. Everybody wants a deal in corn right now. It's probably not going to change until the wheat finds a bottom, and especially until the avian flu issue really shakes more out in terms of how many birds are being culled over there in Asia and Europe, and what's that going to do to our feed demand as far as exports.
It was interesting. I talked to Dave just a bit after he made that, and that's, I think, his first trip to the Chicago Board of Trade and to an exchange to watch what's happening on the floor of one of those large trading floors. It's an extraordinary thing. I've been up several times myself over the past, I don't know, 20 years or something like that, and there's an awful lot that happens very quickly on those floors. It's amazing they can manage to get it done in open cry. I'm always amazed by the way that actually works at the Chicago Board of Trade.
It is amazing, and what's amazed me more is, you know, like you, who've gone up there a lot, in the last 10 years, it's truly amazing how empty it seems. You know, you think it's chaotic and it's noisy and it's strange how they can get anything done nowadays, but 10 years ago you'd go up there, you could not walk in between the corn and soybean pit on any given day, because there's so much more open outcry and less electronic. But today it's changed the whole landscape and the cosmetic of it completely, and it's probably going to continue since the Board of Trade and the Mercantile, you know, Exchange went more into the IPO mindset and for profit and shareholders and such like that. So it is amazing how much has changed, and yet you still see the what would look to be very much chaotic behavior.
Indeed. And we'll keep, and I say this a bit in jest, but our thumb on the scales on that one, and keep an eye on what's been happening at the board and the Merck, and try to figure out how that all happens to take place and what it might mean for the future of agricultural pricing as well. Let's talk more about the price of corn. What do you see over the next, week to 10 days in LDP? It broke from 47 to 42 over yesterday today.
Well, I think probably the biggest thing that got defined to this week, at least in the corn market, is the basis narrowing was more likely due to barges getting more freed up. I think the last we looked at it, in terms of what the government, the USDA, was looking forward to in the river system freeing up since the hurricanes, was as we got closer and closer to Thanksgiving, then the transportation situation would improve and get back to normal. If you combine that with a lot of elevator storage right now, and a lot of elevators have taken on a lot of farm bushels at very wide basis, they like seeing 5, 6, 7 cents in corn especially, and see that narrowing of the basis so that they can then truck it or rail it on down the line and make their, you know, a couple 3 cents off that transportation move. And so that's probably what happened this week, and that's where the report comes into play next week. Can we keep this firm basis? And that's the answer to your question. If the USDA approaches a bigger carryover on next Thursday, then you might see the LDP slip again. But the odds are in the favor that the market has factored in as big a crop as we're going to get, and they're going to turn more towards a continuation of at least steady basis and maybe a weaker future. So that means LDP, the maximum, is probably in at this point.
And that you followed through to my next question, was the cash basis or the cash market probably had load. I made at least a harvest low. I don't know whether you're in that camp or not.
Yeah.
You are.
Yeah.
And that if that's the case, if USDA stays close and the numbers don't really surprise the trade next week, do you expect much weakness? And you said weaker, but I don't know what that means in the corn pit. Are we talking weaker, stay where we are for futures markets, or are we talking weaker, continue to trade lower down below the 195 level?
That's an excellent question. It would be below 195. It would probably be closer to 185 if the other complexes like wheat and beans and meal can't pull themselves together. It seems like to us at this point, Todd, corn has traded for the last 9 months, for the most part, off the heels of the other complexes, and there's really no reason for it to change at this point, especially with South American weather and U.S. hard red, you know, winter wheat weather coming into play in the next couple months. It'll probably just pick up and continue to pick up the issues that these other pits trade. So if we get a good, solid report, friendly, neutral, let's say, in corn, and the other complexes can firm up and rally, then the corn futures has a good look to it.
Hey, tell me a little bit more about this cash, because I'm thinking about this, and I frankly don't know I guess maybe I know part of the answer, but I'm not quite certain. So if you're an elevator, you've got a lot of corn on the ground. You're looking to move it fairly quickly because you were worried that a similar function might happen as last year. I don't think it'll go out of condition because we haven't had that kind of rainfall. But they're worried about that. They're wanting to move it. Cash basis has narrowed a great deal. Does it matter to you very much what the futures price is? And is it okay if it just the futures, it's that the futures price drops to narrow the basis down and then you just make your money there no matter what the case is?
If you're a true elevator, the futures means nothing at this point because you've already sold the futures market to lock in the futures side of the equation, and so you just have left yourself only open the basis. And so once they move that physical corn out of their elevator, then they would theoretically then remove the hedge, mean buy back the corn. That's what we're all waiting for in this harvest low to come due in the futures market, and that's the next step in this four or five-step mechanism we're dealing with right now.
All right.
Yeah.
I want you to walk me through that just a bit, because I think the way that'll happen is, or may happen, is that basis narrows, the futures drop, and we put a second harvest onto the marketplace. Cash drops again and puts the low in, and then we start to buy it back. Is that right?
That's exactly right, and you're probably talking the March futures and the March cash, the January-February cash price at that point, as opposed to the fall price. And so cash may not need to slip hardly anything, depending on how much the futures falls, because then the elevator can control the spigot in the pipeline just by the basis activity of saying, okay, we dropped 5 cents in the futures. Let's go ahead and just narrow the basis a penny. We end up making 4 cents on it.
Yeah, and then let's we've talked plenty about the grains. Let's turn our attention very quickly to the mercantile exchange for just a bit. The live cattle futures, not so terribly bad today. A new lead option on the December contract on the week, they were up 247.5. So is that on the prospects that the Japanese might actually import beef?
Well, yeah, but I think the more direct thing we saw in the cattle was we saw $90 cash sales today in live cattle in the plains in an important cattle sector. You add that to the fact that the corn made some new contract lows, feeders found support off that, and you stimulated the livestock market as a whole. We really felt like the hogs were just a mirror of what the cattle were doing for the last half of the day.
Anything else to add before we let you go for the day?
That'll do it. Just have a good weekend, everybody.
Thank you much, Mike.
You bet.
Mike Zuzulo is with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He joins us every Friday afternoon from his office there in Lafayette, Indiana.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Bezdefer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Well, at the bottom of the hour, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather with the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. His name's Steve Hilberg. AM580's own Mike Zola forecast for the two-state region this evening. Partly to mostly cloudy skies. Lows, he says, will range from 42 in northwestern Illinois to 58 in southern Indiana. And tomorrow, Mike says, partly to mostly cloudy skies, a few scattered showers and some thunderstorms. Highs across the two-state region from 58 in northwestern Illinois to 73 in the far south. Sunday for the extended forecast, mostly cloudy, scattered showers during the morning, then clearing Monday and Tuesday, partly to mostly sunny. In the agricultural news for the day, something from the U of I. Soybean growers could increase their profits by as much as $100 per acre or more simply by planting the highest yielding varieties with the high levels of resistance to the specific type of soybean cyst nematode, otherwise known as SCN. The exact amount of increased profit in any given year will vary depending on the current price of soybeans, says University of Illinois cyst nematode specialist Terry Niblack. Last year, she calculates the amount ranged from $85 to nearly $115 per acre based on results from three different parts of the state. Niblack points out that those numbers resulted from a comparison between the highest yielding resistant varieties matched to the SCN population in the field and lower yielding varieties that were also highly resistant but not matched to a particular soybean cyst nematode. She says it is important to note that this method will not work for everyone. It is effective only when the SCN pressure in a field is high. Another requirement is that SEN-resistant varieties have been grown in that field in the past because that is what allows the nematodes to adapt to the source of resistance. So, for growers who meet the criteria, the system requires only a few relatively simple steps to cash in on the increased profits. The first step is to take a soil sample from an individual field. Details on the proper procedure for taking a sample and preparing it for the shipment are available on the website for Plant Health at the Plant Health Initiative at www.planthealth.info. Again, that's www.planthealth.info. The samples can then be submitted to the nematology lab at the U of I, where Terry Niblack and staff will analyze them. If the level is less than 3,000 eggs per 100 cubic centimeters of soil, then no further test will be conducted. In such a case, the field does not meet the criteria for the system to work. If it is more than that, a test is done to determine the exact type of SCN. It'll take at least 30 days. Total cost so far, $70. Once the test is completed, the next step is for growers to select one of the highest yielding varieties with high resistance to the type of nematodes in a specific field. And well, that's it. Terry Niblack says by following those steps, growers who meet the criteria can easily cash in with improved yields in their fields. Well, up next, it used to be that every little town had a feed mill. Most of them closed in the 70s and the 80s. There were some holdouts, but as their owners aged, so did the storefront. Today, we'll go to Payne, Illinois, where one of the last of those little feed mills has found a new owner and a revitalized livestock feed market. The working floor on any little feed mill across the nation, if you can find one, looks pretty much the same. Usually it's strewn with 50-pound bags filled with everything from dog food to chicken feed. The dust is thick, sometimes in the air, from the mill, no doubt rattling along in a dark corner. One old boy usually handles the bags. This place, these sights and sounds, could come from any era after the arrival of electricity. Just stepping inside a feed mill is nostalgic. It's Main Street, Americana, and it is alive and well, and operating on a niche market in Pena, Illinois, today.
When we got into this, we kind of got our feet wet real early. I'll never forget the first field of oats I planted, 50 acres. I'm combining these oats, I'm thinking, what am I going to do with all these things? Well, when you have that situation, say, all right, here we go. So we start mixing a bag of horse feed. Before I know it, I'm buying oats from other farmers, and I've got farmers now that will grow oats for me, and that thing just pretty much ballooned.
That's fifth-generation farmer and owner since the turn of the century, the 21st century, of Tri-County Feed and Seed, Luke Epley. He bought the place after the hog market bought him in 1998 and forced him out of that business, at least on the large scale. He still sells beef and pork raised on his farm right there in the feed store. He cares for his animals, and to some degree, that's the hook the Tri-County Feed and Seed has used to find a viable livestock feed market. It produces a high-quality premium feed for people who love their animals.
That's the greatest thing of it all. When we make our feed and we put that tag on it, today's date, and that customer comes in today or tomorrow or the next day, and that feed was made that week, the feed within itself will sell itself. It is fresh. It will always be fresh. It is never stockpiled or sold 6 months down the road. It will continue to be fresh, and the products that go into that will enhance that product, and it, like I said, the product itself.
That is especially the case for horse owners, chicken ranchers, and purebred livestock owners. All of those are small farm enterprises, and the little feed mill at the end of Main Street, USA, has found new life supplying them with premium feeds. For University of Illinois Extension in Pena, I'm Todd Gleason. Just a quick little interesting addendum to that story. Tri-County Feed and Seed has acquired a couple of other feed mills in the area, one in Tuscola and one in Nokomis. So it is expanding its small business fairly rapidly.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois. Deferred pricing contracts available this fall. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolnlandagrienergy.com.
Joining us now for our look at the cash grain market is Bruce Bostard of FCC Futures at the Williamsville Farmers Co-op. He's in Williamsville, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Let's talk about the river basis to begin with. How has it been holding up there in Havana, Peoria, Pekin area?
River basis has been improving. Barge freight continues to back off. I would say nearby corn improved 9 cents over the course of the last week. Beans 29 to 30 cents better. A week ago when we talked, barge freight was trading about 500% of tariff. That would equate to, say, a Havana to New Orleans for 65 cents a bushel. Now, that was down from a high of around $1.04 a bushel to get there. Today, 375 traded, so that's about 48, 49 cents a bushel.
And we're still, as we talked last week, well above pre-Katrina levels at this point, and you don't expect those to really trade much lower, I would guess.
Well over pre-Katrina levels, still maybe 50% of tariff over what the highs were last fall. Last week we talked a little bit on where the point was that a barge line might tie off the barge and just kind of set it aside. Did a little digging on that list this week, and some of the barge lines are telling me 250, 260% of tariff is at a point now with their higher costs where they would probably just set the barge off to the side.
And so does it? Do you think it would often trade to that area? I'm just trying to get a handle on how that freight works.
We're kind of a new level. It had been 140, 150% of tariff. It could trade down there on below that on some dips. You might have one person who had barges they didn't need and sell it out as a loss leader, or just to cut his loss. You might have somebody who had a northbound haul and would sell it out cheaper, basically as a back haul.
Mm-hmm.
But it wouldn't get there for any sustained period of time.
Okay, and then turn your attention from the river the other direction from Williamsville and go to Decatur. Tell me about the basis there.
Beans are probably the interesting story there. We saw things last Friday switch over from the Nove to the Jan and pick up 4 to 5 cents and then just basically sit there through the course of the week. Today, this afternoon, we went inverse on soybeans, with nearby being at a 5 cent inverse over Dees Jan. So we went from a big carry in beans to a flat market to a nickel inverse in probably a record turnaround.
And you expect that inverse to widen out, or are they getting beans in?
The market needs to generate some soybeans right now, and it's more of a flat price demand than a basis demand. We've got two different worlds between corn and soybeans. On corn, the elevator has some basis ownership, some corn that they carried over, and a lot of it's sitting in space that we probably would just as soon not have it in piles. So given the right incentive, they'll be more than happy to move corn. Soybeans, there's just not much out there for elevator ownership. It's still all in the hands of the producer, and the producer tends not to be a basis trader but a flat pricer.
So even despite the fact that they have an inverse, it's not likely they'll pick many beans up at this time.
It gets to be a tough to pull beans out. Once they get put away, immediate post-harvest, the bin door slams shut, it's kind of hard to generate soybeans.
And your bids for the day are?
We are at 172 on nearby corn and 565 on beans.
We appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is with FCC Futures out of the Williamsville Farmers Co-op. He's in Williamsville, Illinois. In about 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather with Steve Hilberg. Your local newscast comes up next.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Four people were arrested following a fight this morning at Champaign Central High School involving both students and non-students. The school reopened after being on lockdown for nearly 2 hours today. A spokesperson for the Champaign Unit 4 School District says they had anticipated such an incident following a fight at a party last weekend involving some of the same people. There were no reports of serious injuries and no weapons involved. Preliminary results of an audit of the Unit 4 school district shows the district's deficit is not as large as previously feared. The audit shows the Champaign School District finished the previous budget year $3.7 million in the red, nearly $1 million less than originally estimated. Unit 4 Chief Financial Officer Gene Logus says the district's goal is to erase the deficit completely by 2007. The Associated Press reports that a Champaign dentist has been indicted for his alleged role in the Balco steroid scandal. 39-year-old Patrick Arnold is charged by a federal grand jury of three counts of illegally distributing performance-enhancing drugs. Authorities say Arnold introduced the now illegal steroid product known as Andro, and they now accuse him of creating and distributing three other drugs through Balco, whose clients included several prominent athletes. Authorities say the drugs created by Arnold include THG, a steroid commonly known as the Clear. Arnold's own company, Champaign-based Proviant Technologies, says they're cooperating with authorities in the case and believe Arnold will be absolved of any suggestion of wrongdoing. A study of Hoosier agriculture has found that Indiana is well prepared to become a leader in the production of biofuels such as corn-based ethanol. The study by the Indiana Department of Agriculture found that there's plenty of Hoosier corn to support ethanol production. The Illinois Historic Preservation Agency says the University of Illinois failed to follow the law when it offered two old farm buildings for sale. The agency says the university failed to provide it with information about the sale of the old poultry manager's house and the beef barn at the school's South Farms, as required by state law. Both buildings are obsolete because the university is moving its farming operations further south. Campus officials say they plan to clear up the problem and abide by the law. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to the Information Advantage. This is WILL Urbana. It's a broadcasting service of the College of Communications here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. We're joined now by Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It's been a very warm week. Can we expect that to continue at least through the weekend?
Yeah, I think we're going to be in a period of mild weather here. We started off the week rather cool. Actually, both Monday and Tuesday were below normal as far as our temperatures are concerned, but they were on the rise. And in the last couple of days now, we've soared about 20 degrees above normal, at least on the high end of things. And really, it looks like this general weather pattern is going to continue for the foreseeable future. It'll be a brief cool down this weekend as a cold front comes through. But early next week, we'll be back in southwesterly flow, and with more mild weather, and another front coming through probably sometime around Wednesday, which could bring some showers as it comes through Illinois and Indiana, and then a little bit of a cool down following that. But the cool downs are going to be very, very tempered, and they're not going to be, we're not going to see any real cold weather now for at least the next week. So it looks like some pleasant weather for a while.
Now, are we still in need of some precipitation in the driest areas of the state?
Absolutely. In fact, this past week, we got some very substantial rains in central and southern Illinois with that front creeping through here on Halloween. General rains were close to an inch in most of the area, but north of northwestern Illinois, just had a few little sprinkles, hardly anything, and that's where things have been very dry and continue to be very dry. And until we get some good precipitation systems through there, we're not going to be able to alleviate that too quickly. But the good part is we're out of the growing season, so anything that goes in the ground should stay in the ground.
Yeah, I don't want you to predict, but I would like to know, have you looked historically what the odds are that 2 years of very dry conditions run in the state of Illinois?
It doesn't happen very often. We tend to have shorter-term type droughts just because of the climate we're in with this mid-continent climate where the spring tends to be very wet. It's pretty hard to maintain a long period of dry weather. Not that it hasn't happened, but it's not climatologically, it's just not something that happens very often. Chances are we'll probably get precipitation back to normal over the winter. Looks like the weather pattern's going to be pretty active. Even if it doesn't mean a lot of cold weather, it could mean a lot of precipitation. So we'll just keep our fingers crossed and hope we get our normal precipitation during the winter, and then we should be okay.
You bet. Thanks much.
Okay.
Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center here in Champaign County. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to join us tomorrow morning at 11:30 for Commodity Week. It's our weekly analysis of what's happening in agriculture. If you just can't wait, you can pick that program up early this evening after 6 o'clock. It should be up on our website at WILL.UIUC.edu. As always, just click on AM and Agriculture. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great afternoon.
It's 2:36 Central Time. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Scott Moe of A.G. Edwards in Champaign joins us once again this Friday afternoon. Half hour or so before the close, what's happening now on Wall Street, Scott?
The Dow and the Nasdaq are trading near the middle of today's range after new economic reports failed to generate sufficient enthusiasm to add to this week's gains. Today's key economic reports showed that October non-farm payroll rose only 56,000, less than expected, and the October unemployment rate fell to 5% from 5.1. Energy shares declined as the price of oil dropped below $62 a barrel in New York on forecasts of warm weather in the U.S. Currently, New York advanced decline is 3-2 negative on issues and volume. The Dow Jones Industrials are currently at 10,507. That's down 16 points on a heavy volume of over 1.2 billion shares trading hands. Transports are down 56 at 3916. Utilities are off 2 points at 391. And the NASDAQ's up 1 at 2161. Currently, we have 1,188 advancing issues, 2,007 declining, with 144 issues unchanged on the day. On the interest rate front, the December bond closed at 110 and 21 30 seconds. That's down an eighth, bringing a long bond yield up to a 4.85. Oil is down $1.20 a barrel at $60.58. And the London afternoon gold fix was down $1.35 to close at $460.50 an ounce. Once again, the Dow Jones Industrials are currently at 10,507. That's down 16 points on the day. This is Scott Moe with A.G. Edwards in Champaign. Have a good afternoon.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by Eastern Rug Gallery at 1402 South Neal Street in Champaign. Eastern Rug Gallery offers a collection of guaranteed hand-knotted Oriental and Persian rugs of all sizes, made of pure wool or silk pile, designed to add beauty to any decor, whether homes or offices.
Slow, smokeless burning on This Moment of Science. Robert Frost once wrote a poem about coming across an old woodpile in the forest. In describing it, he refers to the slow, smokeless burning of decay. What a great line of poetry. Neat part about it is it's also technically correct. Decay is an extremely slow burning process. Or you could say fire is an extremely fast decaying process. In either case, what you have is the combination of carbon, oxygen, and hydrogen. Carbon and oxygen atoms love to link up with each other and form carbon dioxide. Right behind them in the race to merge come hydrogen and oxygen, which love to form dihydrogen oxide. It's this kind of rapid merging of atoms that we call fire. Hold on, you say. Fire has, like, flames and stuff. That's because when carbon and oxygen merge to form carbon dioxide, for example, they give off energy. If the merging process is very slow, say in a decaying woodpile, that energy will be very subtle. Speed it up a bit, though, and the energy can be felt as heat. Even more, and you can see it as light. And that's what fire is, light and heat coming from the rapid combination of atoms. Now, all living things are chock full of carbon and hydrogen, and the air has plenty of oxygen in it. So when a pile of dead wood is left out for a while, the carbon and hydrogen atoms slowly combine with oxygen, leaving behind a gradually diminished pile. There are also microorganisms helping things along. But even without them, there would still be the slow, smokeless burning of decay. This Moment of Science comes from Indiana University, with underwriting from the Office of the Chancellor. Today's program was prepared by William Oram, with help from Scott Tagey and Jeff Gunter in physics. I'm Yael Cassander.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Lincoln Square Village in Urbana, with more than a dozen shops, businesses, and restaurants, including Tang Dynasty Restaurant, So Sassy, Mr. John's School of Cosmetology, and the Arthritis Foundation.
In sports, the Miami Heat say Shaquille O'Neal will miss 2 to 4 weeks with a sprained right ankle. The 12-time All-Star center was injured in last night's home loss to Indiana and left the arena on crutches. The Heat will now turn to Alonzo Mourning to start at center. The Chicago Blackhawks face off against the Dallas Stars in Texas tonight. The St. Louis Blues have lost 6 in a row going into